What happens when your competence becomes a liability? What? Did I just really say that? I did. Because it's true that sometimes our competence, our knowledge, our skills, the experience that we bring forward to a project, to a career, to our positions, actually ends up holding us and everyone else back. So today we're going to unpack, what does that mean? And what does it look like? And what do we do about it? So in many veterinary practices, what happens is the most competent person actually ends up becoming the bottleneck because they know everything, they do everything, and so they are always the go-to person. And the problem is that they don't even realize it until they're absolutely exhausted. So when all of the things in the practice have to funnel through one person, they become a stopping point. Nothing ends up moving forward without them. So examples of this might be team members that are constantly checking in for decisions, having to check with the doctor. Maybe the doctor's being interrupted all day long. They just can't write their records. They can't focus on a lab result or whatever they're trying to work on. Maybe rechecking work that should just be sent and done, but everything has to be, you know, revised or double checked. And again, that feeling like nothing can move forward unless you approve it. Well, what happens is the more capable you are, the more problems flow towards you. And the more problems you solve, the more people rely on you. So it becomes a vicious cycle. Competence is actually one of the most valued traits in veterinary medicine. And of course it is, right? We all want to be good at what we do. We study hard to become veterinarians or veterinary technicians. But when everything starts flowing through one person, that competence can start to become a liability. So today, we're talking about why this pattern happens and how it affects resilience in veterinary teams. Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer Edwards, and welcome to the Resilient Vet Podcast. We help vets and their teams build lasting, fulfilling careers through sustainable mind and body strategies. I'm a leadership and executive coach and a former practice owner. I'm also the founder of the Core Element Leadership Framework. And as a former practice owner with more than 25 years in this industry, I now help veterinary professionals and leaders with the inner part of leadership, strengthening leadership, communication, and culture so they can perform at a high level without sacrificing well-being. I'm here today with my co-host, Aaron Shaw.
Thank you for that intro, Jennifer. Again, my name is Aaron Shaw, and I am excited about this episode because I work so hard to be competent, and now I'm curious where my liabilities may be woven into that. I am from Project VetSpan, and I work with vet professionals and vet teams to build more durable teams. We know that vet medicine is a tough place to be physically and emotionally, and I work with them installing systems so they can be more resilient, so you can be more resilient. And we talk about some of these things on the Resilient Vet Podcast, and I'm excited to have this conversation. And the first thing I wanted to ask you, Jennifer, is that how can this idea that competence can turn into a liability? That sounds really interesting. What does that mean?
Yeah. It seems like a little bit of an oxymoron, right? Like I said earlier, we really value competence in this industry. And the more you know, the species, the breeds, the different ages of the breeds, all the ologies that we need to know, the skills, the more competent we become, the more valued we are. And so what happens is that naturally, the people who are the most competent in a given area are going to start to have responsibility moving towards them in that area, right? So we all become known for fill in the blank, the thing, the area that we're good at. So it might not even necessarily be a technical aspect. It could be communication, right? So say you have one or two doctors that are really good at communication, really good at handling and speaking with and I'm going to say negotiating with is the word that came to my mind, but it's not really a negotiation, but with those difficult clients or those upset clients and having those effective, powerful communications and conversations, right? So what happens when that client comes in, everybody says, oh, let's go get Dr. So-and-so, you know, they'll handle it, right? So the most capable staff member, the one who's been there the longest or the one who's just on top of everything, go ask them, go ask them, go ask. We just keep asking the same person because we know that we can rely on them. You know, I'm sure every practice has their tech guru. You know, they handle all things IT, AI, and social. And so what happens every time something needs to be done or something's not working, you know who to go to. And even on the animal side of it, I remember always every practice I worked in, even as a relief vet, had the cat whisperer. You know, every practice has the cat whisperer. Well, every difficult cat, you know, upset cat, high FAS scores, go get that person because we all know that they're going to talk that cat down and be able to handle them with finesse, you know, with lower amounts of stress. So short term, it really works. It's an easy go-to. It helps things run smoothly. We know what we can rely on. Problems get solved quickly. And there's comfort in that, right? I'm not saying that that's bad or wrong. In fact, utilizing people for their skills is a great thing. That's what makes a powerful team. However, long-term, if that is over-relied upon, then what can start to happen is the entire system, the entire structure or organization starts to recreate itself around that person. And so other people may not have the opportunity to develop those skills to step in. They may not even speak up and say that they want to because, well, that's so-and-so's job. You know, she always handles that. They're not going to let me try to fix the computer. You know, they're not going to let me start to post on social. That's her thing. I'd never be as good at it as she is because she's been doing it for 10 years, right? And so other people sometimes don't have that opportunity to rise and shine. But then what happens when the practice is dependent on an individual? It's a liability because what if that person leaves? You know, what if that person is feeling overwhelmed by this, but they're not saying anything? And then they're at risk for burnout, you know? And basically what can also happen, and I've seen this a million times, is there starts to become this story that's created that the practice cannot live without that person, the lead surgical tech or whatever it is. And that person may not actually be a fit for that practice, but yet perhaps undesirable performance is tolerated simply because there's this perception that they're absolutely needed. We can't function without them. And it's just not a very powerful place to be for anyone, including the practice. So in a nutshell, the idea is the more problems you solve, the more problems come to you. But over time, if that's overdone, that one person becomes actually a bottleneck for the practice.
So it's strangely enough, the actual strength that someone brings to the table, in a sense, can actually create the unsustainable workload, actually creates more potential problems down the road if it's just so much stuff that one individual takes on, the fixer of all things, and doesn't kind of share the workload, I would say. It's interesting. And so I've also heard you talk about the idea of over-functioning. What does over-functioning mean?
Well, and this is a big thing with veterinarians, as we know, because we're all in our little high-performing modes that we go off into. But basically what it means is when we take on more responsibility than is necessarily appropriate. And it doesn't mean occasionally stepping out of what's yours to help somebody. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about more systematically taking on carrying everything for everyone, or maybe not everything, but a lot of things for a lot of people. And it can become quite burdensome for that person. And it, again, people start to just expect it from them. So they just go to them with everything and they don't want to say no because their identity may even be wrapped up in being that person who can do it all, right? And over time, the, yeah, don't worry, I got it. Yeah, I got it. That starts to have an impact. There's a lot of areas that people do this in, and it can be decision-making, you know, yep, I'll figure it out. Emotional support, always being that person who's there for the other people. Again, not bad to do when it's done in a conscious and intentional manner. Solving operational problems, logistics, this isn't working, that's not working, the autoclave is broken, we all know who to go to every time. Managing conflict, fixing mistakes, you know, really anything that happens in a veterinary hospital needs somebody to address it. And again, when it's just always that same person, we can run into some of these problems. I do see this sometimes specifically with doctors, because doctors are often in a position to lead. I mean, honestly, they're always in a position to lead, sometimes more than others. And a lot of times, because things can get chaotic, things can get emotionally charged, veterinarians often become the emotional stabilizer for the clinic as well. And over time, they can find themselves absorbing a little bit more of that emotional burden, absorbing some of the client frustration, the grief, the team is upset, you know, like the conflict, I'll help. And especially for those that are in a position that they're good at it, and maybe in general, they even like it, it can still constantly come towards them. And so that effect of becoming almost like this emotional shock absorber for the whole practice takes its toll. You know, veterinarians, like I said, by definition, if you're a veterinarian, you are a leader. Leadership is not based on titles. Leadership is based on who you are in a moment. Anytime you're influencing another, you're leading. So seeing appointments, doing a procedure, surgery, dentistry, anything, you have even one team member by your side as a doctor, you're a leader. So there's an impact when we take everything on. And I guess what I would say is just because you can do it doesn't necessarily always mean that you should. So it's about bringing that intentionality.
Sounds like a recipe for burnout and building some resentment, perhaps. If somebody starts off with good intentions, I want to do more, I want to help, then if that person becomes identified as the person who fixes all the things and does all the things, you can kind of sort of see as this happens over time, perhaps that person who's very competent in doing things starts to realize, like, why am I always the one that has to fix the thing? And so it can kind of switch from empowerment and I'm doing a good thing to why does it always have to be me? And you know, from somebody who coaches vet professionals and teams, like what comes to my mind is a nervous system that never gets to relax and reset. And I'm sure cortisol is spilling over at all times. And it sounds like frankly, a recipe for disaster, potentially even like just a general unhealthy work environment, because that's, if it's not sustainable, there are going to be ripple effects through the rest of the team and ultimately down to patient care. It seems like so much to unpack with that. But how would this show up in a vet team on just a day-to-day basis? What does this look like?
So some of the areas I mentioned earlier, you know, just categorically, emotionally, structurally, procedurally, operationally, some of the things that might be symptoms or signs, like I mentioned earlier, it's this constant interruption. When a person is a go-to point person and there's a whole bunch of other people, person A goes to them with one thing, person B goes to them with one thing, C, D, E, F, and then person A goes back 3 hours later with another thing and they get snapped at or they get a sigh and they're like, gosh, I just had one question. Sorry. Because what happens is the whole team can't see how everybody is coming at this one person. And I know that was something I felt severely when I owned my practice. I know I've shared with you that, you know, over the years we learn and we grow. And, you know, some things I did the way I led 20 years ago would be very different if I was in that position now, because I don't think I was always the best delegator. And there were times when everybody had to come to me as the practice owner with questions or problems or concerns. And it's exhausting. You know, it might also look like team members not feeling like they can just make a decision and go. You know, I talk a lot about shared leadership, or it's a, you know, people call it collective leadership. And the beauty of that is that things can just happen, right? Like people who are qualified and at least knowledgeable appropriately can just make decisions and go with it in the team. And it doesn't always have to funnel back to the manager, back to the owner, the doctor, whoever the leader is. Efficiency, right? How often are people redoing other people's work instead of taking the time to mentor them and teach them and let them learn? Yes, that might take a little more time now, but in the end, it'll save work. And then ultimately, I think sometimes the kind of net effect of this is that leaders end up feeling like they can't get away. You know, I can't go on, look, I can't take a vacation. Are you kidding me? Like, what would happen? Or a day off or not work a Saturday? Because if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. So ultimately, what happens is when one person is, we talked about over-functioning, we end up with others on the team who are under-functioning. You know, and with that, they're hesitant, they don't have confidence, they're dependent, and then they don't take initiative. It ends up weakening the entire system. And in this vicious cycle, what can happen is that people are hesitant, they don't know, they don't have the skill, the knowledge, the confidence, whatever it is. So another person always does it. As a result of them not doing it, or always doing it, the other people don't. They don't learn, they don't grow. So then they're still hesitant. And next thing you know, I hear this so much from leaders, is they get frustrated in this vicious cycle because they're like, I don't understand why my team won't just do it. Why won't they take initiative? Why do they come to me with every little thing? And they start to almost judge them for it. When if you were to back up, really the space was never created for it. So it takes almost like stepping out of the loop a little and observing and saying, okay, I get it now. It's nobody's fault. It's just the way the pattern fell. But without a conscious and intentional interrupt, it's just going to continue on like that. And then when that person does leave for whatever reason or gets sick or whatever the case may be, everybody's at a complete loss of what to do.
Yeah, I think sometimes with leaders, it can be, it's an interesting journey, and we've both been on this. I own a human rehab and performance practice, but dealt with the same, it's leadership, right? So it's still the same challenges. But the challenge can certainly be understanding that being a leader isn't just doing everything. That I think sometimes people get confused with, like, I'm a leader because I do everything. And you have staff that are standing around feeling like I'm not supposed to do anything because that person does all this stuff. And, you know, I think it's not hard to, you know, to go through everything that you just explained, how that's actually not great leadership. You know, you're a doer, which is different than a leader. And there's, of course, it seems like there's an overlap. Everybody has to do some stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you lean so much into the doing all this stuff, I would question how much of a leader you may actually be if you're the one who's doing all this stuff. Like, who are you leading? To me, like, maybe a leader, and maybe different, your definition, I'm sure, is maybe more elegant, but I think of it as kind of like being a maestro of an orchestra or something. You know, it's like, that's kind of like, there's a bunch of people doing a bunch of things. Like, that's leadership. You can't have the maestro like playing every instrument all the time. It's just not going to be quite as good. Anyhow, so that's my little side thought on that. But so what if we know that these things can be a challenge, what does strong leadership, how is that different than taking on everything? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely resonate with everything you just said, Aaron, because that is a common misconception that people feel that, you know, erroneously have this idea that I'm a leader, therefore I have to take on everything myself. And I agree with you 100%. That is, in my opinion, the exact opposite of what leadership is. It is not about taking everything on. It's not about fixing everything, doing everything, taking all the responsibility. Yes, there is some of that that goes with leadership. And in each situation, it's defined a little bit differently. And so there is owning that aspect of leadership, but a big part actually involves the opposite and flipping things and sending them out towards other, setting the direction for others, giving the mentoring, the skill building, the guidance on best practices or how to do something that perhaps somebody is less experienced or you know, not as confident in. You know, it doesn't mean that they can't do it. It just means they may need a little proverbial hand-holding. It's developing those people. And what happens is in the end, you end up with a strong leader who's not overwhelmed and not burnt out, and a whole team of developed, confident, you know, people. It strengthens the entire system. So again, this has nothing to do with a title, because associate veterinarians, no title, no medical directorship, no ownership, they're still in that moment leading. So think about prepping for surgery. Think about setting up for an appointment. You know, the veterinarian isn't necessarily going to do all of the things, but sometimes it can be more subtle than actually doing. Like they may not physically draw up the vaccine, but still there can be this element of they have to make sure every, like, micromanaging. You know, let the team do their job, and then you do your job. You know, your job is to make sure their job was done correctly. You know, we don't just blindly take a handful of vaccines and go put them into a dog without checking to make sure that what does the dog do for? What did you draw up? And you check the label. Like, right, we have our job, but we also need to allow others to do their job. So when we do that, we end up with more people who are capable and strong. And it strengthens not only the whole team, it strengthens the entire organization, really, the whole structure.
That's how you have a resilient vet team, I believe.
Exactly.
Just to name drop the name of the podcast right there. So it's clear that all associates, everybody on the is part of this. Everybody has to be part of it. But let's play devil's advocate. What are the long-term costs if this isn't addressed? What happens over time? What can happen over time?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of impacts. And I think an important point to also bring to light here is that for anybody listening, I just really want to emphasize that this is not about that anybody's doing anything wrong, and often not even intentional, right? In fact, it's usually, again, the opposite. It's people who are helpful and compassionate and want to be a team player and support their team members. So they end up saying yes to a lot of things and taking it on. And they also like doing those things because they're good at them. And we all like to do the things we're good at, right? Because of course it's fun and it makes us feel good. So while it all may stem from a very thoughtful place, a place of help, there are long-term impacts, like you said. And I kind of think of it in three tiers. You've got the personal effects, you've got the team, and then you have the practice itself. And from a personal standpoint, from the person who is the go-to, you know, very often, you know, I hear people talking about they're just exhausted. They're tired of making decisions. You know, the term decision fatigue came from that. I mean, there's just practicing medicine, there's a million decisions in a day. You know, and then you add on top of that everybody else's decisions. It's just a lot. You know, people go home at night and just flop down on the couch because they're exhausted. You know, they're emotionally overloaded. They can start to feel irritable and snappy and frustrated. And so it could start to strain relationships because they're resentful. And then, like I said, you know, team member, you know, A walks in the office and asks a question and they're met with a big sigh. Like, oh yeah, go ahead. What do you, you know, and it's not that the person wants to be that way. They may even apologize. I'm so sorry. It's not you. I'm just, because it's just all too much. And long-term, if left unchecked, and in, you know, some cases it can actually lead to full-on burnout, which we're seeing a lot right now, unfortunately, in this profession. So from a team level, I think of it more as team engagement, buy-in. You know, everybody wants their team to, you know, be engaged and participating and loyal and you know, let's all have a great meeting and, you know, work together and collaborate and communicate. And that's wonderful. And that's a lot of the work that I do. I love helping teams to develop that. But what happens when teams are not given that opportunity to individually develop and participate and take on roles, they don't have ownership. They don't have engagement. They don't necessarily have buy-in to changes that are implemented. And so then, you know, management or leadership get frustrated because they're met up against a wall. Every time they try to do anything at the practice, everybody resists change and they start complaining. And so, many studies have been done on this that when people don't feel like they're growing, they don't feel like they're learning, they don't feel valued, there's a lack of loyalty. There's a lack of motivation to stay. And so then there's turnover. And then again, the leader is sitting there, the manager, whoever it is sitting there saying, I don't get it. I mean, they're nice. You know, they're not, you know, it's not like they're yelling at their employees, right? We're nice to them. They're well paid. I don't understand why they're not happy. And so it just becomes this almost like hidden dynamic that's occurring underneath it all. And nobody can really put their finger on what's not working. Like something's not working, but we can't quite figure out what it is. And a lot of times this could be at the root. And again, it's just that bottleneck to progress. You know, talking about the practice itself, again, it's just that you know, funnel. Everything has to go through the one person. It's just a stopping point. So we talk about resilience on this podcast, and I would just say, if there's a system that can't function without one person, it's not resilient.
It's right? Not a system.
So, you know, yeah, somebody owns a practice, they're a key player. It is what it is. Like, there are certain roles that are more key. However, even with an owner, a system can be created such that it can function without that person.
100%. Yeah. I think that if everything relies on one person, it's not a true leadership. Unless you're like literally one person in a box, some space. But I mean, if you have a team and everything really relies on one person, you don't have a system in place. You don't even have perhaps good leadership to help disperse that. So let's assume hypothetically that somebody's listening right now and nodding their head and thinking, "Oh shoot, maybe I'm the liability here." So how could a veterinarian start shifting out of this pattern that they find themselves stuck in it right now?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different ways to approach it. I mean, first step with everything always is awareness. You can't fix what you don't see. And so it's just to start to notice, you know, when either you yourself are experiencing just a lot of burden, a lot of responsibility, or that you're noticing that other people might be feeling this way. You know, or perhaps it might even be easier to see it when you're not involved in it. So at your practice, you're noticing, boy, you know, this particular veterinary technician, like everybody goes to her with everything. Wow. And maybe you start to take a step back. It's, again, not wrong, bad. It's nothing to fix right away, but just to start to notice, why is that? What are they going to her with? Like, is any of that things that can be given to other people? You know, how does she feel about it? And it's just to start to ask the questions and to notice. The next thing that we can do is that when there are moments when something needs to be handled or fixed or addressed, is instead of just by default doing it, is to just take a moment and pause and say, is this an area where somebody else could be developed? Could I take an extra 3 to 5 minutes, explain it, and let somebody else do it? Or maybe not in that moment, but yes, they can. So make a note that at the next team meeting or at the next one-on-one meeting that you're going to start to teach this other person or other people how to do this particular task. You know, this is baby steps. This isn't something that's changed overnight. But again, with the awareness and a focus on developing others, little by little, this can start to change and, you know, people start to have more confidence and ownership and everything I said earlier that was the impact of not having this in place. Then as we start to have development in place, we can start to see this shift. And so the opposite of everything, they start to make more decisions, they're more engaged, they have more skills. Redefining leadership success. You know, what does it actually mean to be a successful leader? And we've talked on that a lot during this episode. You spoke to that beautifully earlier. And kind of getting out of the context of I'm the leader, I do everything, I'm in charge, I have last say, and starting to look at it more of leading a team. And the job of the leader is to guide, to mentor, and to develop other people. And it's a very different context. It does not involve letting go of standards or pretending like you don't care. That's not what we're talking about. But just kind of redefining what leadership means for the individual and how that can start to look less like a lot of burden. And then lastly, I would just say is asking for input, because I would be willing to bet for a lot of people out there, they have team members right now who are sitting there who would love to take on other things that they either don't because somebody else has it, or perhaps they're too shy, or they're afraid to say something in case they're going to get, you know, shot down or saying, no, you can't do this. But if asked, you might be really surprised to hear what comes out of some people's mouths. And they'll say, well, I'd really like to take on social media, or I'm making something up. And you go, oh my, I had no idea you were interested in that. Well, I know I never talk about it, but I really love it, right? There's so much of that out there. So when you start to actually ask these questions, it really gives an opportunity for other people to rise and shine. And at the same time, people can go, ah, oh, finally, I don't have to do all of this myself anymore. So it's a win-win.
That's great. I think we can recognize this risk. Perhaps people that are listening can recognize this in themselves, or again, people on their team, perhaps. And you've set us up with some good steps to kind of start fixing this on their own. Any other words of wisdom that you would give a team or an individual that's kind of struggling with this right now?
I mean, nothing really else. I guess I would just emphasize, kind of in summary, that at the end of the day, this is not necessarily a problem that needs to be fixed. Nobody's doing anything wrong. It's more of a pattern that develops as a default feedback loop, more by people who care and are compassionate and trying to help than anything else. But when we step back and we look at it from a bird's eye view, we can start to see that there really is an impact on the team, on the individual who everybody's going to, and on the practice itself. And when we start to reverse that and step out of that loop, it really, it just is very empowering for everybody involved.
Problem of good intentions, which...
Exactly.
I think that...
Exactly.
I don't know if I fully explained in my intro, I'm not a veterinarian, but I am married to one. And I can tell you that there's no more noble profession than people that are in vet medicine. And I think some of these tools that we just talked about today in another episodes of the Resilient Vet podcast, these tools that we talk about can really help people do their best work and reach their potential and shine. And some of these skills are not taught in vet school. Maybe none of them are taught in vet school.
School.
So this is we hope that you're utilizing us as a resource. And if somebody wanted to utilize you as a resource, then where can they find you?
So feel free to reach out. My website is drjenniferedwards.com. It's doctor with a D-R. I'm also on social platforms, and primarily LinkedIn is my favorite, and that's at Dr. Jennifer Edwards. And I would love to hear from our listeners if you have ideas for topics that you want to hear, if you're ever interested in, I have a 6-month leadership coaching program, speaking, workshops, anything like that, that I may support your team, please feel free to reach out. And how about you?
Again, my name is Aaron Shaw. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find my website, Project VetSpan, and I help build durable vet professionals and vet teams. And you can check out my website, drop me a line, and or reach out on LinkedIn. I'd be happy to chat some more. And of course, if you To reiterate, if you do have episode ideas, we'd love to hear them. We'd love to unpack some things that can help you be more resilient. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Thank you.